You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Learn more at wearelibertarians.com.
The Boss Hog of Liberty podcast is the latest hit on the We Are Libertarians Network. Each week, Jeremiah Morrill and Dakota Davis explore life in Henry County, Indiana.
It's a show about our circle of friends, public officials, and our experiences. 80% observation, life, humor, and 20% politics. Boss Hog of Liberty is the day-to-day happenings of Henry County, Indiana, which is just like your community. Add us on iTunes and sample us today.
Dear Leader would want you to.
Oh, the Johnny Rocket Launchpad is Liberty. Each week, we strive to bring you the best guests in talk radio. The Johnny Rocket Launchpad delivers weekly interviews of noteworthy politicians, experts, and activists. The Johnny Rocket Launchpad is bringing the party to the Libertarian Party and launching ideas in your direction. Check us out at JohnnyRocketLaunchpad.com. You can hear me, Kurt Nelson, and the beautiful Heather Nixon talk about the ideas of liberty, rock and roll.
Hey guys, this is Roger Paxton, and if you're fed up with the government running every single aspect of your life, but you're not listening to the Lava Flow podcast yet, then what's wrong with you? Check us out at thelavaflow.com, or just go back to sucking up to the government. The Lava Flow podcast, striking the root every single episode.
It's time to shake up your podcast feed, folks, by subscribing to Lions of Liberty, the only libertarian variety show out there. Spend Mondays with me, Mark Clare, as I feature in-depth interviews with great names in the libertarian community and fun roundtable discussions.
Electric Liberty Land with me, Brian McWilliams, every Wednesday, your weekly dose of comedy, culture, and liberty.
And Felony Fridays with me, John Odermatt, where I expose injustice in the broken criminal justice system.
Find us on iTunes, Stitcher, and at lionsofliberty.com.
Welcome to We Are Libertarians. I'm your host, Chris Spangle. We bring you all of the irreverence modern politics deserves while putting people before political parties. We examine current events from a libertarian perspective with the goal of leaving you better informed. Please be sure to rate and review us on iTunes, like us on Facebook, subscribe on Patreon at WeAreLibertarians.com. In exchange, we're going to give you all kinds of cool bonus stuff and extra hours of the program behind a paywall. So if you pay at least $5, you get... What do you get here? You get, like, an hour to 2 hours of extra show
extra,
a week.
Yeah, extra, yeah. Extra show content.
Yeah.
High quality of the podcast week.
At commercial-free.
Commercial-free, yep.
So, and if $10 a month, you get to watch the show live on video. $25, you get a cool signed poster. $100, you get to eventually come on the show. We've already made plans. Christy Avery's been on the show. I need to talk to Brandon Luke about coming on the show. I've already made plans with Craig DaCosta and Jason Doolittle about coming on, so that'll be exciting. So please be warned, this show is raw, unedited, and authentic, so the language is sometimes strong and offensive. With me is Harry Price.
Hello. You also get a cool, like, title, a role inside the Discord chat. The more you pay, the more I allow you to do inside the Discord.
You self-promote the Discord and the Twitch channel more than the Boss Hog of Liberty promotes the Boss Hog of Liberty.
You know, I'm learning. I'm learning everything.
Shameless self-promotion via the Abdul Hakim Shabazz School.
Yeah. Just like, because like the $100 a month, I give you a kick and ban ability inside the Discord.
Yeah, you get to block people. I wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah, it's dangerous. But, you know, that's ability, you know, that I put up there to people who are really into the show, like big, you know, producers. They've got, I'll give them some weight to throw around the Discord.
So we have a fun show for you tonight. Hopefully, I said, hey, we're not going to go real long tonight, which means it's going to be a nine-hour show. But I don't plan on being long-winded tonight. Got to save some for Thursday, everybody, when Creighton and Galt and I will be together probably for the last time as Creighton moves to New York City. But tonight we're going to talk about the Nunez memo. We're going to talk about Lady Doritos. We're going to talk about gerrymandering in front of the Supreme Court. But first, we need to talk about Liberty Hangout. All right. So late last week, you started seeing. I want to start with libertarian clickbait. I really like. It's not just Liberty Hangout, but because most of you have no idea what that is. But I'm going to enlighten you. So there's a lot of ways to do what I do. And there's a lot of ways to do libertarian media because libertarian media has no editorial standards. You're never going to get, you know, like Ben Swan's probably, he's coming back, by the way. He partnered with Dash Coin and is relaunching his news network. Jason Stapleton, I think, does a really good job of breaking down the news, even though he does a really good job of deleting my comments in his Facebook group. But we'll talk with Jason about that later. And he also calls me Springle. Chris Springle of We Are Libertarians, which is funny. But I always love a shout-out from Jason. So Jason and I, we're kind of, I would say, in the world of libertarian, is the libertarian movement, we're kind of the only guys doing news, straight news analysis. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of people out there who have blogs and Facebook pages who do a lot of, you know, news and really kind of a lot of clickbaity stuff. Like, I think the Libertarian Vindicator does a fairly decent job of taking news and applying it to a libertarian audience. There's this group of high school kids that have, I apologize, I think it's like 71 something. They've got a website, Jack News, which is founded by the people that ran the Gary Johnson campaign, which is why you always see a very pro-Gary bent. But, you know, like the Free Thought Project, we're starting to get into InfoWars territory. And then there's the Liberty Hangout, which is the scourge of all libertarian. Like, it's run by this kid named TJ. He's a college student and basically just pumps out pro-Trump stuff and says, I'm a libertarian, and then just repeats whatever, you know, it's MAGA, left and right. even in December, and I've put up a poll if you want to check out on our Facebook page. A couple of his statements, because I just think it's so funny. It's like you're redefining what libertarianism is to be pro-Trump. He tweeted, if you don't love Donald Trump, you don't love liberty. You can vote in our poll, yes or no. He also said, our agenda is very blunt. Our goal is to infiltrate libertarianism and make it right wing. That was in December 27th of 2017. So your agenda is to infiltrate libertarianism and make us right wing. Well, I would say that if you're infiltrating something, you're not a part of something. So how do you know what libertarianism actually is?
Correct. Yeah.
So he was this kid, TJ, this little college student, very young. Mm-hmm. He's trying.
Yeah. He's getting his word out there.
Listen, here's the thing about a lot of these libertarian sites. 6 years ago, I was one of them. Mm-hmm. Now, I had, at that point, 9 years of media and journalism behind me. Mm-hmm. So I had some experience in doing stuff, but I've, over the years, tried a lot of different things. I think it's Justin or TJ. He goes by both, but I only see him as TJ on Twitter. So I've tried a lot of different things to try and figure out what works best for We Are Libertarians. You know, and when I started this in 2013, when we started the blog, it was very much, what am I? Am I a political news analysis site? Am I a podcast with characters where we do comedy? Am I libertarian-leaning only? Am I only doing political, you know, analysis? Am I only doing pro-libertarian propaganda? What am I doing? Mm-hmm. And you have to go through a process of trying to figure out exactly what works best for you. Mm-hmm. And as you know, as evidenced by late last year, I mean, I'm continually trying to learn what I think best, and what I have found, and what the numbers have shown over the last couple months, especially, is that you guys want straight political analysis from a libertarian perspective. You want to know, what does the news say, and what do you think about it to help me inform me on how I should think about it. And so what I try to do is try to give you a balanced and fair view from on all of these issues. Like, we'll talk about the Nunez memo. And every day I say stuff on Facebook and Twitter and on this podcast that liberals and Republicans hate. Like, people on the left, people on the right are always calling me a part of the other tribe, right? So, and I think that if you're a libertarian, you identify with that because you don't fit into that left-right paradigm, and so you don't really fit. And that's why it's great to be a part of the We Are Libertarians community in the Facebook group or on the Discord or, you know, as part of the Patreon groups. You get your own community of people who think differently and don't necessarily fit even sometimes in libertarian circles. Mm-hmm. Like, I'll tell you what, the people who are meanest to me are people who are black and yellow profile pictures, like the black and yellows. Mm-hmm. Like the fight that I had on the League of Liberty with Roger Paxton, like that typifies every interaction at the end of the day that I've had with a lot of anarcho-capitalists.
Yep.
People with Gary pro Gary Johnson twibbons in mm-hmm. their profile picture, always nice people.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Nice people.
Nice. Just trying to sell the message.
Just trying to learn some stuff because mm-hmm. they're new to the libertarian movement. Those are mm-hmm. the people that I like. You know, but so we're all kind of politically homeless. We're all trying to figure out, you know, what does the news say? What should libertarians think about it? And I find that there are a lot of people who are still trying to fill their oats, and some people are figuring out what works for them, and it's creating clickbait that gets headlines. And I think what you saw, as evidenced in that last episode, where, you know, I basically said, okay, everybody is just saying that the Libertarian Party is not having Ron Paul come speak at the convention.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know a single libertarian on the planet that doesn't like Ron Paul. Like,
maybe some black and yellows.
No, but that's the funny thing is, like, the people who call me a dirty, filthy statist are the biggest Ron Paul fans. Like, everybody loves Ron Paul. Even mm-hmm. the most hardcore libertarians, anarcho-capitalists, don't want no government, cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
Like, join the Free State Project. All Ron Paul's great. I love Ron Paul. You know what I mean? Like, everybody loves Ron Paul. I know mm-hmm. Sam Goldstein, who was my former boss at the Libertarian Party. Mm-hmm. I said, what is this? He said, it never happened. None of this is true. I said, okay. So I reached out to Daniel Hayes. Daniel Hayes and I had been talking for a period of 3 months
mm-hmm.
about him coming on to talk about the Libertarian Convention. And to be honest, I kept kind of putting it off because that's like, I'm just going to have a guy on to talk about the Libertarian Party convention. Like, I just don't do that kind of blatant promotion.
Right.
Like, there's no news to that. There's no mm-hmm. angle to that that's interesting to the audience. It's, like, nothing that you couldn't get from just a simple Facebook post.
Correct, yeah. To you, it seemed like the simple Facebook post or just networking, for network's sake.
Exactly right. You know, so that's why I don't do candidate interviews. It's like, I've been asked to interview Larry Sharp several times, and I've just not done it because what am I going to do with Larry Sharp that you haven't already heard on 100 other libertarian podcasts?
That'd be kind of cool to do with the Quadruple Black episode. We'll get all the
you, Abdul,
Darren.
Yeah, you, Darren Marion, yeah.
Yep. You could just run the board, and we'll just have Abdul host.
So I see all this stuff happening where the Mises Caucus basically came out, and it's all detailed in the last episode, but to give you a brief example, I'm sure you've seen it, to give you a brief rundown, the Mises Caucus, who is trying to run a full slate to replace everybody on the entire LNC with the exception of Carolyn Ann Harlos, I'm sorry I got your name wrong, I get everybody's name wrong, the girl with the pink hair, the lady with the pink hair, who I like fine, mm-hmm. She and I have a lot of disagreements on a lot of stuff, but I find her to be a very honest broker, and I think she, I see people call her a nut job. I'm like, no, she's actually really reasonable. Like, she's, you know, very engaged, and she has a great Facebook page that teaches people how to get involved in the Libertarian Party. Like, she's a radical, and I'm like, I can get along with you. And she says, I can get along with you. Great. So they want to replace everybody, and Michael Heiss told me this in my phone conversation before the interview with Daniel Hayes. He said, we want to replace every LNC member except for Carol Ann. I said, okay. So Daniel basically gives him information that he then uses for political opportunity, which good on him because it was a win. Everybody knows mm-hmm. who the Mises Caucus is now and who's in charge of it. And, mm-hmm. you know, they're going to go into the next election, into the next convention with actually a presence. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but they're very critical of the current leadership, and Michael basically fed this storyline to several libertarian sites like Liberty Hangout, Free Thought Project, Reason eventually covered it, the site that I couldn't remember, 71 something, they covered it, and everybody starts sharing it. Glenn Beck shared it. John McAfee shared it. You know, everybody was sharing this article that Ron Paul was disinvited to the Republican convention because mm-hmm. that's juicy. And like the narrative is that we're all supposed to hate the Libertarian Party and that it sucks. Well, I'm sorry, that's bullshit. There's a lot of good work that goes on in the Libertarian Party. There's a lot of good candidates in the Libertarian Party. There are a lot of good activists in the Libertarian Party.
Mm-hmm.
And Nick Sarwark does a good job as chair in certain aspects. Arvin Vora has done a great job as vice chair in terms of turning around the social media. His personal social media is the problem.
Right.
But in terms of building up a Libertarian Party social media presence, he's done a good job at that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not so black and white. And I know that it's easy for everybody just to shit on the Libertarian Party and to shit on Libertarian candidates and to shit on Libertarian activists, and it's bullshit. It's lazy, it's intellectually dishonest, and as I felt Mike Shipley, this guy I follow on just some, I follow like 2,000 Libertarians on Facebook. I'm friends with them. 2,000 to 3,000 Libertarians. So I don't know who anybody is. So Mike Shipley shares, let's be clear, character assassination. Let's be clear. Character assassination by twisted half-truths is fraud initiated to achieve a political goal. And he's right. If you are writing a clickbait headline to try and push a false narrative, then you're committing fraud to achieve a political goal, and you're violating the very non-aggression principle, the mm-hmm. pledge that we all signed as Libertarian Party members. I agree with that.
Yep.
Okay? And we're all so quick to dismiss anything the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, CNN, anything that they publish. Journalistic outposts that have actual editorial standards
mm-hmm.
and are governed by a culture of trying to get it right. We won't share that. We'll sit there and go, oh, that's fake news, along with all of our Republican friends.
Mm-hmm.
But when a Libertarian clickbait website shares some bullshit story that tickles our ears, we smash that share button so quick, and we don't give a damn about the consequences. And so what I decided to do was to interview Daniel Hayes, the guy who was at the center of the actual controversy. Because I'm watching going, nobody's talking to this guy. Literally every single one of these outlets that has this salacious story, none of them have a quote from Nick Sarwark. None of them have a quote from Daniel Hayes.
Mm-hmm.
None of them apparently contacted Wes Benedict at the national office. Like, that to me says you're not a journalist. If you're not going and trying to at least find out what the other side says, you just have an agenda to push.
Right.
Which is bad journalism. And some of you I'm going to give a pass because you're high schoolers. You know what I mean? Like, you're in the same place. I'm not unempathetic because I've been in that same place where you're like, I don't know how to do this.
Mm-hmm. And I have the time.
Right. I'm sitting here 15 years down the line going, okay, here's what I ought to do according to these standards that I have for myself, standards that the audience that I have cultivated expects from me,
mm-hmm.
and standards that I have learned from fellow journalists and media friends. So I don't expect everybody to have that kind of stuff. But then there's the Liberty Hangout TJs of the world
mm-hmm.
who have an actual agenda. Yep. Those are the people I have no respect for. So if you see a Liberty Hangout article, just expect that it's going to be complete garbage, and I'll explain why here in a moment. But if you listen to the actual interview with the guy, it's not as simple as what everybody made it out to be. He said, I have no problem with Ron Paul coming to speak. I'm a libertarian because of Ron Paul. I do think that if the choice in speaking slots is between Ron Paul and Judge Napolitano, I'd rather have the judge because, A, I think he's going to be a bigger draw, and B, he hasn't been writing articles shitting on the Libertarian Party for the last 5 years, which I can completely
True.
Respect and yes. understand. You know, he has a point of view.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he did in the interview at one point say, yeah, I decided to move on from Ron Paul, and which was his right.
Mm-hmm.
But there wasn't ever a vote. Somebody said it's spreading that there was a committee vote. There's not even a vote on the committee.
Mm-hmm.
And if you listen to the interview, it's just like I see every libertarian that I know on Facebook start sharing this story, you know, and I just go, are any of you taking 1 second to use your brains?
No.
Like Daniel Hayes Sam Goldstein is not a Ron Paul fan in terms of, you know, he's a Republican and we've got to put libertarian candidates first. There's been a very uncomfortable tension between Ron Paul and the Libertarian Party for 10 years because Ron Paul, because A, Bob Barr is a piece of garbage and screwed Ron Paul over in 2008. And from then on, he just didn't want to support our candidates and actively like pushed people away from voting for Gary Johnson. And if you're on the National Libertarian Committee and your job is as an elected representative of that party is to support your party's nominee and somebody who should be promoting a like-minded individual goes, eh, you shouldn't vote for them because I have a personal issue with that particular party. It's not the LNC member that has the issue. It's Ron Paul that has the issue.
Right.
And, like, we've taken the worship of Ron Paul to ridiculous levels in the libertarian movement. I like Ron Paul. Like, my politics are identical to Rand Paul. You know, like, I'm a libertarian because of Ron Paul. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, the man is not a deity. Like, there are good things. Many, 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 98% of the things about Ron Paul are good, and there are 2% that are not good, and we should be free to say, I disagree with him on this, without somebody going, you're not a libertarian! Like, go fuck yourself.
Because you shouldn't agree with somebody 100%.
Ever.
Ever.
Yeah. I don't agree with me half. I disagree with, like, listen to this show. Mm-hmm. I disagree with myself half the time. So, I wake up this morning to a tweet from Liberty Hangout.
Do-do-do.
And the page, We Are Libertarians, they write, which shilled for the LP when they banned Ron Paul from speaking, is now sharing content from socialists. Those clowns love socialists more than Ron Paul while maintaining their libertarians. What about that is true, Harry?
The We Are Libertarians part.
Right, he got the name right.
Got that right.
First of all, the idea of shilling for the LP, the idea that you would support the Libertarian Party to this guy is disgusting to him, which to a lot of our listeners it might be. To me, I'm plenty disgusted with the LP. We did a show called Tough Love for the LP. Like, I vote majority Libertarian, but I wouldn't say I'm a shill for it.
And you wouldn't shill for free either.
Well, yeah, like if I did an interview with Daniel Hayes because I felt sorry for him because of the things that people like Liberty Hangout were doing. When you have like this massive circle jerk of people who want something to be true instead of actually going, is this true?
Right.
I feel bad for the person who's getting their ass kicked for no reason because it's punching down. Like nobody would sit there and have a conversation with Daniel Hayes. And I think if you listen, my interview wasn't shilling. I was like pushing back on him going, so you said this earlier. Mm-hmm. Is this like, what did you mean by that? Like, did you go into the relationship with Michael Hayes with a chip on your shoulder? Like, and I don't think that Daniel Hayes came out of that interview smelling like a rose.
No.
I think there are parts of that interview where he made himself look bad.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if I were a shill, I would have edited that stuff out. I would have done a puff piece. I would have, you know, just, I wouldn't have started the interview by reading the actual Mises Caucus article with the guy sitting right there listening to me trash him as I read the words of another person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I just said to him, like, hey, I'm going to read this article that's very critical of you. I hope you're okay with that. And he said, no, that's fine. You know, I wasn't, if he had said, no, I wouldn't want to do that, I would have done it anyways. You know what I mean? Like,
cool, you could be on mute.
Right. Then, no, you don't get a chance to speak for yourself. You know what I mean? So, Ron Paul was never banned from speaking, so you're continuing to lie. And we're sharing content from socialists. That was true. I had no idea that Mike Shipley, which, so he's on this is LPedia, it looks like. Mike Shipley is a longtime libertarian activist and current secretary of the Arizona LP. He's into aerospace. He worked for Move On in 2006. Advocacy for LGBT.
Okay.
In 2017, he also participated in founding the Libertarian Socialist Caucus, which gives voice to individualistic philosophies inspired by thinkers from minority left libertarian traditions, which predate the modern LP. He also chaired the Reefer 2404 referendum campaign in Arizona. Now, Liberty Hangout, for their part, has tweeted out something along the lines of, the libertarian movement stands for property rights and not gays, is the way that I'll put it.
Clean that up, didn't you?
But even if this guy is part of this, whatever the socialist socialist means government control. Like, I can understand that if you're a mutualist and like you think the end goal of libertarian, like the end of government equals communes.
Yeah,
I can understand. Like, my brain can process that, but like government force being used in a libertarian way, it's just not libertarian. So I just don't quite get that. But
well it could be like a voluntary system. Like, socialism would be fine if it was voluntary. People could leave as they wanted to. Right. People could opt in. It's fine. Cool. You can do that over there. You know, because they have private property rights. If they want to go out there, take over, I don't know, like a whole place in Wyoming and decide to make their little socialist haven, that's cool. Private property rights.
So we love socialists more than Ron Paul. Well, our biggest interview was with Ron Paul, 113,000 downloads. Mm-hmm. I voted for Ron.
Where you accosted him for an hour.
I voted for Ron Paul in 2008.
Did you?
Yeah, in the primary.
Oh.
So you're morons. So I've spent all day at the We Are Libertarians Twitter trolling Liberty Hangout and with the We Are Libertarians Facebook page. I feel somewhat guilty. It's like when you're on a diet and you eat, you fall off the wagon and eat three holiday cakes in one sitting while watching The Crown. I'm not saying that I did that, but
Chris Fitt's going to be mad at you.
Oh, I did cardio today, make up for it.
Okay, that's good. But yeah. So while I stayed up all night studying, doing things, very productive things, you know, messing with different stuff, and fell asleep all morning long, you've got up and did, you know, just started trolling all
night. I've just been trolling. And so I feel a little guilty because I know I'm not supposed to do that stuff, but they make it too easy. Mm-hmm. The idea that you can share Mike Shipley's post, which nobody else in the world was saying, but he was saying a true thing. Let's be clear, character assassination by twisted half-truths is fraud initiated to achieve a political goal. 100% true.
Yeah.
I can agree with Mike Shipley's statement without agreeing with Mike Shipley's worldview.
Correct.
And when a Liberty Hangout says these guys agree with their worldview and it got 20 retweets and it's comments all day long accusing me of being a left libertarian, which, oh my God, like, you just go, okay, now you're doing it to me. You're just committing fraud against my person.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really, like, insidious and just, I know that he doesn't know what that word means because anybody who engages in identity politics like this where you're just, I can't refute what you're saying, so I'm just going to lump you in with a group of people that my followers don't like.
Yes.
Thank you to the We Are Libertarians listeners who tweeted back saying, I've listened for 100 episodes. Daniel tweeted back, I've listened to 100 episodes. You're just making stuff up. Reinhold had a great point. Like, my point is, use your brain. And I know that this audience is exceptionally smart. I'm not talking to dumb people. I know that you listen to this show because you want to achieve higher thought like I want to achieve. One day I will achieve higher thinking than where I'm at now. But don't just share clickbait articles because the headline, it's from a libertarian outlet and you're a libertarian and the headline seems outrageous.
Yeah.
Like, and even if you click the Liberty Hangout article and read it, it was just half a screenshot and an entire story predicated on that. Like, there has to be some journalistic integrity. Part of my goal with the show is to get all of us, to get a group of libertarians thinking critically about the news so we can identify problems within our movement and within American politics and our communities. And this is a huge problem. When I see a massive amount of libertarians sharing a clickbait article because, oh, it's from a libertarian-leaning outlet, it must be true because they're on my team. That's identity politics. That is the worst of what we see in other parties. And we have to be better than that. And if we're not going to be better than that, then we all might as well just play video games and quit. And we'll just change the name of this to we are not doing this show anymore because there's no point if everybody's just going to be a fucking idiot. I know that's a long title.
Super long title. We need to
super long title.
Shrink that down to
that. Right. But that's my point, is use your brain.
When I first came aware of this article, it was off of Carla, I'm going to butcher her last name, Carla Garrick, former, Yeah, she's South African, so I'm going to butcher her last name. But for the Freezer Project. But anyways, she posted a meme of it. Because I think she read it, talked to some more people on it, but she was more really talking about, hey, you know, if Ron Paul wants to go to a libertarian convention, he needs to sign up and be a part of the member of the Libertarian Party. You know, either you can join the team and you can speak, or you cannot join the team and not speak. It's, you know, that's the way she saw it. It was very simple as that. Or from the, so my first touch with this whole project was just from that one meme there, and I was like, what the heck is going on? You know, I was like, why are people memeing Ron Paul? You know. Right. What did Ron Paul do? You know, what did he say? Because, like, you know, with him being on the air all the time, okay, maybe he said something goofy, and it's like, oh, was he asked to, you know, did someone deny him the right to speak at the convention? And that's how I first got it. But just for the simple fact, someone said, like, no, if you want to come speak at the convention, you should, you know, sign up and be a party member.
Right. Okay.
Which, that's another thing, too, is like, hey, if you're going to come speak at the convention, shouldn't you be a party member?
He is a party member.
Is he?
And Ron Paul and is Nick he? Starwark tweeted out, like... Yeah, he is. He's a lifetime member.
That's right.
He joined in 87. He paid with a gold coin, and he did that video. And honestly, there's a little bit of me watching that video going, oh, I haven't seen Ron Paul speak in 5-6 years, and he's turned into Pat Robertson of the Libertarian Movement. Okay. I'm sorry. Now I'm just being petty. I shouldn't be mad at Ron, but I am a little mad at Ron because Ron unnecessarily stoked the fire with that video. And it was pointless, and it was dishonest, and he shouldn't have done it.
Hey, Ron Paul makes mistakes, and it shows you.
And Chris Galt goes, who are you to criticize Ron Paul? And I go, the fact that you think I shouldn't criticize Ron Paul says we all should criticize Ron Paul more.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, which is my whole point. Like, I like Ron Paul. I agree with him a lot, but he's not libertarian... deity status, like
the Jesus.
You know how we have celebritarians?
Yeah,
we've achieved a level of deitarians. Ron Paul and Larry Sharp and deitarians. Murray Rothbard. You just can't like criticize any of these people because they're deitarians now. Excuse me. Like, we don't do identity politics. We don't do cult of personality in the libertarian movement.
Apparently, we do
because we're supposed to rise. We're not. Anyways,
personally, like I remember, I was listening to another podcast on the LRFM network. I can't remember the name of it. Happens after 10 o'clock. Sorry, I can't remember the name of your podcast. I'm sorry, dude. But and I commented like in his chat room, going like, "Hey, I just want Ron Paul just to retire from everything, move into Keene next door to Ian. I think those two sitting on a porch talking, that'd be the best show ever. That's all I want."
Ron Paul should keep doing a show. He's doing a good job.
I just think he should, you know, just retire, get some tea, sit on the porch with Ian, and just talk.
All right.
He's done. He just needs to stop, retire.
He should keep doing a show. And right, if he doesn't want to, then send us his studio. All right. Thank you for listening to my rant. I just have been stewing all weekend long over this, and I'm very annoyed at libertarians right now. So I had to get it off my chest. The memo was released. So we did the show, and at the end of the last show, we kind of touched on the memo and the meaning and gave you some context. What did I say we were doing next?
You had to stop arguing on social media, which I thought would be a great segue.
It would have been a great segue had I done it that way, but now we're going to the memo. I'll get to that later. That's why I got to print that off and, like, follow it. Now, see, I'm worried about this ear zit.
Why are you worried about an ear zit?
Because... my friend told me last week about this Chinese zit map, and apparently, like, if it's on your chin, it's hormones. If it's, like, around your eye, it's, like, something in it. If you get zits in a certain place, then that's, like, that part of the body is failing, and I keep getting them on my ears, which is kidneys, and I've been drinking nothing but cranberry juice ever since because I'm worried about my kidneys now unnecessarily. And I put on my headphones tonight, and I got a pain, and now I have ear acne, so I'm pretty sure I'm dying.
I don't think you aggressively hydrate all the time?
All the time.
All the time.
Gallon and a half a day, easy.
So your kidneys are incredibly flush. You don't have to worry about kidney stones, stuff like that. I think the main reason you probably have pimples and stuff on your ear is probably because you wear headphones all the time.
Yeah, every day.
Every day, you do it for your job. You do it when you get home here for your other gym.
And the gym.
You do over-ear headphones for gym?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. So you're sweating on there. You're just clogging your pores up there.
Okay.
I don't like believing those Chinese math, too, because I get, like, pimples on my chest.
Right.
And everyone's like, oh, that's, you know, that's a buildup of estrogen. I'm like, you know how much tea I have?
Okay. That's a buildup of estrogen.
Yeah.
All right. So back to the memo. Now that my existential crisis is over.
Yeah.
So the memo got released. The memo was, here's the deal. The memo says whatever political party you came from wanted you to think. So it was it the, like, initially the reporting on it was like, wow. But the more you kind of sit and think about it, you go, okay, this wasn't as much of the bombshell as you thought it was going to be. And as we go through this, I'll explain why. So,
the FBI and DOJ obtained one initial FISA warrant targeting Carter Page.
Well, here's the thing. This memo comes from a House Republican, and we're going to detail where he got some of his information. But Devin Nunes is part of an oversight committee of the DOJ FBI. And Trey Gowdy was the one that went in and actually read the FISA memo because only one House member could go in and read it. So Devin Nunes didn't even actually read the FISA memo. So he and his staff and Trey Gowdy put together this memo, and what you have to understand is it's a partisan memo. It's partisans who are very close to the White House wrote this memo. And so is it gospel? No, anything that is hyper-partisan is not gospel. Now, the Democrats and Adam Schiff have a memo of their own, and then there's supposedly a third memo, and now we're just stuck in memo land. And the truth is the FISA warrant that surrounds all of this, Trump could just release it, and we could all read for ourselves. But this is an interesting moment where you have the House Oversight Committee basically leaking classified information, Edward Snowden style. They're getting approval from the president because, remember, when you take the oath of office, you're granted special magical powers that give you the ability to do things that Edward Snowden didn't have the ability to do. The memo was cleared by the White House, and this one particular section allowed them to release it. So this is from Byron York in the Washington Examiner. House Intelligence Memo released what it says. He got an advanced copy along with Fox News, but it was the best summation of what was in it. The House Intelligence Committee released the memo. Here are the key points. The Steele dossier. Now, remember, the Steele dossier is the P-Gate doc. Like, remember the thing that was released in BuzzFeed and CNN put it out to way back in January of last year? And it was, you know, documenting by this British spy, Christopher Steele, who worked for the MI6, the British CIA, essentially. And he worked as a Russian intelligence analyst. And he now went to work. He just whores out his services, basically his expertise, to put together dossiers. So Steele worked with this company called Fusion GPS. Now Fusion GPS was hired. Fusion GPS is formed by former Wall Street Journal reporters, and they do opposition research. And so you hire this firm, and they go and dig up dirt on you or your opponent. And this blog, this one blog in Washington, D.C., I don't think it was the Examiner, but the Free Beacon. The Free Beacon hired them to do oppo research on all the Republican candidates, and when Trump got the nomination, they stopped funding it. Then Hillary, through a law firm, Coy Perkins, hired Fusion GPS to continue doing all of the research. Now, So Fusion GPS then hires this British spy, Christopher Steele, to put together this research. And he is paid through Clinton money. Now, he eventually ends up having a conversation with Bruce Orr at the DOJ. Bruce Orr is the number four man at the DOJ. Bruce Orr's wife, I think it's Nancy Orr was her name, worked for Fusion GPS. So you have Steele meeting with, I think he met with Andrew McCabe at one point. He met with Bruce Orr at the DOJ and the FBI, and he was working for Bruce Orr's wife at Fusion GPS as they put together this dossier. So you've got some weird tangential connections, you know, a lot of, you know, what I really think about the whole Russian thing on both sides, when it comes to the Clinton Foundation, when it comes to the Trump-Russian stuff, when it comes to what we're learning about the DOJ and the FBI, what you are seeing for the first time is how American politics actually works. That's what should freak you out. It isn't a partisan thing because it's happening on all sides, right? This is how American politics works. You're dealing with a very small group of people who live in the same worlds, and they have a certain set of groupthink, and that's the problem.
Yeah, and they like to hire their wives, their cousins,
their friends.
Friends and family members. So, like, when people outside of it, you freak out, like, I think somebody, like, Ron Paul's like, look how much he paid his family members. It's like, well, yeah, you know, who can you really trust when you're that, you know, that high up? Or if you... You know, you're gonna. How many people have gotten their, you know, their family members and jobs of companies that they do business with? You know, like, hey, you know, I sold this company like, you know, 50 tons of salt. You know, can you, you know, you pick up my cousin?
Right. Yeah.
Thanks, salt company.
So
I bring up salt because the Discord, we dish out the salt.
So here's what is in this memo. So the Steele dossier gets floated around Washington D.C. for a long time. You know, John McCain finally gets a copy of it, and he gives it to the FBI. Little does he know that they've been participating in the putting together of this dossier, but he's very troubled by it. So McCain takes it to Andrew McCabe at the FBI and gives a copy to Comey, and you'll see how small the circle is. So the Steele dossier formed an essential part of the initial and all three renewal FISA applications against Carter Page. Now, Carter Page is a person who, let me just jump to who is Carter Page. So this is from a Vox article called The 9 Biggest Questions About the Nunes Memo Answered, which I thought was a very good breakdown. And obviously, being a Republican memo, I wanted to go to Vox, which is a left-leaning site, and see what they had to say. And so here's what they say about Carter Page. If I can find my place.
Shuffle the papers, boy. That helps.
Should I say duddle up, duddle up, duddle up while I do this? all right. Man, I'm just a mess.
See,
you talk.
You can use the Trello board, so when you want to jump to different things like that, you can tell it to click and do different...
Shut up, Harry. All right, so... Number two, what does the Nunes memo allege? Memo focuses on Carter Page, a Trump campaign foreign policy advisor with business ties to Russia and open sympathies with the Kremlin's foreign policy. The key allegation is that the surveillance of Page was improperly authorized and potentially politically motivated. In July 2016, while advising the Trump campaign, Page flew to Moscow and met with Russian officials. This raised eyebrows among U.S. intelligence officers, to say the least. So the FBI and DOJ put together an application to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, FISA court, a court that approves surveillance warrants pertaining to national security and foreign intelligence, to start watching Page. The court granted the application. So what you have to remember is this timeline is, you know, the Obama administration is in place, and the entire Ukraine crisis is happening in the background, and here's a guy who has business ties to Russia and is, you know, doing the Washington circuit of think tanks praising the Kremlin, and they're like, all right, what's up with this guy? And then he gets attached to the presidential campaign of Donald Trump. So Andrew McCabe confirmed now three renewals because each renewal is only for 90 days, right? So they're sunsetted at 90 days, and if you want another FISA warrant to monitor the communications of a person, you have to go back and get another warrant. Andrew McCabe confirmed that no FISA warrant would have been sought from the FISA court without the Steele dossier information. The four FISA surveillance applications were signed by, in various combinations, James Comey, Andrew McCabe, Sally Yates, Dana Boente, and Rod Rosenstein. Now, Sally Yates was the person who, Sally Yates worked at the DOJ, and Dana Boente, I think, is also at the DOJ. I know less about them, to be quite honest. Rod Rosenstein, basically the second in command at the DOJ after Sessions, James Comey, former FBI director Andrew McCabe, the exited second in command at the FBI. Andrew McCabe, again, remember that name? That name, he was the guy who, when his wife was running for a state house seat in Virginia, while Terry McAuliffe was governor, was given $600,000 by the McAuliffe campaign fundraising arm. Terry McAuliffe, and I'm sure none of this is related, Terry McAuliffe was the chief fundraiser for the Clintons when they were in the White House. Huge, huge supporter of the Clintons. Big friend, great friend. Former DNC chair when Clinton was in the White House. I am sure that that payment to her campaign while her husband was investigating Hillary Clinton had no influence on her whatsoever. The FBI authorized payments to Steele for work on the dossier. The FBI terminated its agreement with Steele in late October when it learned by reading an article in Mother Jones that Steele was talking to the media. So Steele had gone and leaked when he didn't feel the FBI was taking him seriously enough. Steele basically did interviews with Yahoo News and the Mother Jones and put out the information that he was finding. The political origins of the Steele dossier were known to senior DOJ and FBI officials, but excluded from the FISA applications. So you have this dossier funded by political, both Republican and Democratic operations. Mm-hmm. And it is one of the key components of the FISA application to spy on an American citizen, and they don't tell the FISA judge that it was paid for by political arms. DOJ official Bruce Orr met with Steele beginning of summer 2016 and delayed two DOJ information about Steele's bias. Steele told Orr that he, Steele, was desperate that Donald Trump not get elected president and was passionate about him not becoming president. So the guy who wrote the memo that put together this opposition research was, quote unquote, desperate that Donald Trump not get elected president and passionate about him not becoming president.
Ooh, that's a dangerous combination.
And he told that to the head of the Department of Justice, or not the head, the number four man at the Department of Justice in charge of this. The FBI and Justice Department mounted a months-long effort to keep the information outlined in the memo out of the House Intelligence Committee's hands. Only the threat of contempt charges and other forms of pressure forced FBI and Justice to give up the material. Once Intelligence Committee leaders and staff compiled some of that information into the memo, the FBI and Justice Department, supported by Capitol Hill Democrats, mounted a ferocious campaign of opposition, saying the release of the memo would endanger national security and the rule of law. So they said a lot of really stupid stuff. Like, you know, Adam Schiff is still going out and saying no one will ever share information about domestic terrorists because they feel that if they give their information to FBI, then it'll just hit the House and the House will leak it and it will be politicized. And it's just patently ridiculous.
Correct.
And any Democrat that said that this would endanger national security is an idiot because nothing in here is anything that we already didn't suspect and really kind of didn't know, except for the fact that the Steele dossier was an essential part of the initial and all three renewal of the FISA applications. Carter Page is the first American that we know of to be targeted by FISA.
Secret court.
While he's probably still being targeted. So
right.
Now, he doesn't have the right to go to the FISA court and give counterintelligence. That's the part about this that is so egregious. Carter Page is under investigation, and he's not notified that he's under investigation. He has no defense in this court to say none of these allegations are true. This Christopher Steele guy, upon discovery, it would be found out that he told a government official that he was passionate about Donald Trump not being president. You know, there's no defense that Carter Page has to give in the FISA court because he didn't know any of this was happening.
Right, yeah. And it goes for 90 days, and then they can renew it. But, of course, in that 90 days' time, they have to find something else new. But with that type of warrant, you know, wiretapping, everything, they're going to find something
right
to keep it going.
So that's what we're looking at. It's not the sum total.
Yeah, and using a spy apparatus, which everyone has always feared, being targeted and sent to U.S. citizens for the small crappy offenses, is being shown like, hey, it probably is happening more than we like to admit.
So that's the gist, All right, so let's dive a little deeper in with this Vox article.
Because, like, especially how weak Sauce it was to have it to go after him.
Right.
It's kind of weak.
So, who is Devin Nunes? Devin Nunes is the chair of the House Intelligence Committee and a longtime Trump ally. He served on the transition team after the election and defended Michael Flynn. Let's see. Aaron Blake, The Washington Post, wrote, Nunes seems to go out of his way to defend Trump in a way few others did. Let's see. Basically, when Trump said that Trump Tower was... here's the hilarity of Vox. Listen to this paragraph. In the context of the conversation that we're having, listen to this paragraph. Perhaps the clearest example arose after Trump tweeted in March that President Obama had wiretapped Trump Tower during the 2016 presidential campaign. The heads of both the NSA and the FBI categorically denied that any such wiretapping had occurred, but Nunes quickly came to Trump's defense, holding a press conference and saying that the intelligence community incidentally collected information about U.S. citizens involving the Trump transition. They are positioning Devin Nunes as a moron for saying the intelligence community incidentally collected information about U.S. citizens involved in the Trump transition. He's right. Like, he's not a moron. Your article that you're writing proves that he was right. Mm-hmm. Yes, Donald Trump said wiretapping. That is different than what happened to Carter Page, sort of. But so, Donald Trump doesn't have the sophistication to know the difference.
Yeah.
These people.
And it goes to show more that, you know, Donald Trump's still stuck in the 80s. But yeah, yeah. But.
Right. I don't... as much as, like...
Yeah.
I don't want to be... I just look at it and I go, I don't want to praise Republicans because I don't like Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
But these people make me look at Republicans and feel sorry for them.
Right.
Like, this article is basically saying... Devin Nunes was right, and you're writing he's wrong. It's just, you're basically, it's doublespeak. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's so frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
So we covered what the memo alleges.
Well, it's probably gonna be like that for like another year and a half as all these leftists, like, you know, pieces, you know, their organizations, they've been unchecked for 8 years. So
right.
Yeah. It's culling.
Julian Sanchez, an expert in surveillance at the Libertarian Cato Institute, writes, If this is their evidence of worse than Watergate, it's thin. This reads like something you'd put together to sound scandalous to someone who isn't going to parse it closely. And on that, I agree. That's why I'm not blown away by this, because this is all kind of stuff that we knew. And it just makes you go, okay, what's up with Carter Page?
Mm-hmm.
Because Carter Page was being surveilled as far back as 2013 when Donald Trump wasn't running for president. So... if the Republicans and conservatives are going to pin this conspiracy on Carter Page being an honest guy, that's probably not a good case for you to make.
Right.
To be quite honest.
Man, yeah, it does make you wonder.
Yeah, exactly. Because here's what it comes down to is there's problems at the DOJ. There's problems with all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And all of this needs to be looked into. But remember, our rule of thumb when it comes to conspiracies is never attribute to intelligence what stupidity will actually cure. Like, we as libertarians are so quick to jump on this is a government conspiracy bandwagon. This doesn't necessarily say that they were out to get Trump. Like, the very words of Peter Strzok when he texted out saying... you know, there's not much there in this investigation. I don't know what Mueller's... he basically said, I don't know what Mueller's going to get out of this because there doesn't seem like there's a case here.
Mm-hmm.
So there isn't a follow-up text that says, we should manufacture that evidence.
Yeah.
They didn't say that. What he's basically saying is, we shouldn't even bother with this. So you look at it and you go, there's some serious issues with a lot of this.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted them to look into the Russia thing to make sure that there was no collusion between Trump and Russia. There wasn't. I'm convinced at this point that they were too incompetent to collude with Russia.
Yeah.
It is true that Russia hacked the DNC and gave that information to WikiLeaks to help keep Hillary Clinton out of the White House. As Denzel Washington said, the security state would be locked in, guaranteed, done deal. and we'd be at war with Russia if Hillary Clinton were elected president. And that was finally a celebrity said something I agree with.
Yeah, he's right about that. Yes.
So Russia wanted to make sure that Trump got in and Hillary didn't. Again, it's not all about Trump. It's about Hillary. That's what all of this stuff is. Mm-hmm. It's like you look at this and you go, okay, the Nunes memo and everything we're learning out of the House Oversight Committee is that there were serious problems in the Hillary investigation on her emails.
Mm-hmm.
In that she got to bring a lawyer with her, and she wasn't sworn in, and have a nice day, Mrs. Clinton. I know that you and Huma lied to us, but we're not going to charge you. And we're going to change the language so, you know, you can continue to run for president because we think you're going to win, and we want to keep her phony baloney jobs. Mm-hmm. You know, and then she has the audacity to blame Comey and her book for her losing when it's like, it was your fault in the beginning for not following the law protecting American secrets with your servers.
She shouldn't have won the primary.
Petraeus has a misdemeanor and probably a felony, mm-hmm. if I remember correctly, for leaking national secrets in the same way. He leaked national secrets to the woman he was having sex with. He got charged.
Mm-hmm.
He went to court. Hillary Clinton didn't. So
billions of difference.
Then the very same people start to investigate Donald Trump, and they're hardcore after him.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody, you know, Michael Flynn did the same thing Huma Abedin did. He got charged.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a double standard here that's a real problem, and we need to figure out who was part of this double standard and why. But it doesn't necessarily mean that there was the deep state trying to overthrow the Trump presidency. Is it possible? Absolutely possible. Do we know that at this point? No.
Yeah.
Should we investigate this? Absolutely. Yeah. Just as we should have investigated the Russian situation a year ago.
Well, that goes off to like what Glenn Greenwald wrote in The Intercept about like the whole double standards on due process and civil liberty privacies, that the American people are always right with double standards and how they want privacy for one thing, but the moment it irks them and stuff like that, like he outlined, like when Americans was okay with all kinds of scrutiny when there was just supposed to be brown Muslim people that they didn't like from other countries, but the moment the TSA started going after them, now they're privacy advocates. Now they want to do something like that. They're fine with not due process when it comes to like the Me Too process. They like that. Some of them like the public lynching, but once it hits someone they like, now they want due process. Now they want everything go down through a certain process when it finally hits at home with them. Like I said, yeah, the Glenn Rewells wrote an amazing article in an Intercept called The Nunes Memos. Katie Rolfe's article shows how concerns for due process and civil liberties are highly selective and self-centered.
Yeah, so and we will put all this in the show notes. Trust me, the show notes, the show links.
Yeah.
Oh, there's going to be so many, too many. I'm gonna spend an hour tomorrow just clicking the link button. Why did House Republicans want to release this memo? Republicans said it's because it outlines surveillance abuses the American people needed to know about. Let's have a great debate about its consequences and the opportunity it presents to make things better so these things never happen again, Rep. Matt Gaetz said in January 30th. But experts on the FISA system, even civil libertarians critical of the way law enforcement uses it, notes that these Republicans aren't promising any changes to how FISA works or even suggesting that the system in general needs to reform to stop any future abuses. There's a conspicuous lack of interest in drawing any policy conclusions from what they purportedly consider a major institutional scandal. In fact, the 12 people on the committee, the Republicans on the committee, all voted to renew Section 702, not even a month ago. So they're...
At least they're consistent.
Right. They're consistently partisan is what they are.
Yeah.
There's some smoke here,
mm-hmm.
but it isn't the slam dunk that the 2 weeks of teasing. And listen, Devin Nunes, PR genius. He went to every single conservative media outlet, big personality, got them to start the release of the memo hashtag,
mm-hmm.
build a lot of anticipation for this memo. It was like the Super Bowl the day that it got released.
Mm-hmm.
It was bigger than the jerk when the phone books arrived. The phone books are here. The phone books are here. Like, he did a great job. Not Memo 2 with the Democrats. Adam Schiff not going to be able to sell it like Devin Nunes. But it certainly was not the big smoking gun that we all thought it might be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's never really when they, especially if they hype it up like that. Usually, the smoking guns would get released on a Friday night quietly,
right?
Because kings don't kill kings.
Yeah. So let's dive in and talk about Carter Page a little bit, because you're going to hear that name a lot from here on out. And let me say before we jump into Carter. The Mueller investigation, some say that this was about hurting the Mueller investigation. Nothing in this memo was Mueller had nothing to do with any of this. It's not
even
going
mentioned?
Nah, I don't remember. But it was mostly about the FISA collection.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why it seems disingenuous, is that if your goal is to fight the security state and then you offer no solutions on fixing the security state, and 30 days ago you voted to keep it the way that it is. And like Section 702 wasn't used for this particular instance, but it's part of the same system that they would use. It just seems disingenuous and political and hyperpartisan. But the Mueller investigation was not even really a part of this. None of this happened when Mueller was even appointed. Mueller was working at a law firm when all this was going on. And, you know, I will say this. Mueller, out of all of these characters, he seems to be the only decent one. Like, if there is such a thing as a decent member of the quote-unquote deep state, Robert Mueller might be it. He seems like a very honest man. And by all accounts, left, right, center, everybody seems to say Robert Mueller is an upstanding guy. Mm-hmm. Former head of the FBI during the Iraq War. So, obviously, libertarians would have a problem with his judgment.
Which is okay.
Right. And, you know, when things cropped up, like the text messages, he promptly fired people.
Right.
So his personal conduct, the only way that Robert Mueller can get fired is if Rod Rosenstein fires him.
Mm-hmm.
And Rod Rosenstein is not going to fire him because he's given him no cause to fire him.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
You were about to say something?
I was just going to say, like, the whole documents losing thing on that, and I think the great thing about it, that heads did roll. If heads didn't, that'd be an issue. That's the issue.
Right.
That shows that they did. Someone found a cover up and rolled heads, or found it, like, either you're covering something up or you're just too incompetent to keep on board.
Right. So you have, out of 50,000 text messages over 6 months between two people, we've presented the smoking gun evidence to you where, you know, we need to do something, the secret society joke. Like, you think there'd be more planning, but if there, you know, certainly is a lot of, you know, probably hentai being passed around between the two of these.
Correct, yes, because they had an affair, so there's probably a lot of nudie pics.
Absolutely.
It's probably a sexting weekend, you know, because I can shoot out like 10,000 sexting photos quickly.
So, but I think, in my mind, you look at it and you go, okay, Did this small group of people within the DOJ with a lot of power, did they try to overthrow the Trump election? I don't think so, but I sure as heck think that we ought to investigate and find out. Because I'm not sure. I don't think anybody else is sure. And if they did do it, it's very, very bad if they did.
Right, yes.
So, but in all of this stuff that just keeps coming out about all this, It has the appearance of being nefarious. And you can take one little thing, just like Liberty Hangout did to us today. You can take one little thing and you can write a clickbait story and you can make it look nefarious and you can blow it up into a bigger deal than it really is. And people will believe you. But when it just kind of is a consistent drip of things happening, I'm starting to look at it and go, I want to know. I think everybody else should want to know, and I think that if you're going to apply the standard of, well, there's flimsy evidence that Trump colluded with the Russians, but we got to get to the bottom of it, then if you're an intellectually honest person and you don't want to be hypocritical, you should say, I think there's something here, and maybe we should take a look at this too. So what's the problem with having some transparency? Absolutely nothing.
Nothing.
Because when most Americans are looking at this going, they got Iraq wrong, they have lied to Congress about what they can and can't do.
Several different times.
And now this is all going on. I don't necessarily trust the Bureau. I don't trust the CIA. I don't trust the NSA. I think that it's important for our republic, for our democracy, for us to take a look at this and see what's going on, root out bad actors if there are some.
Mm-hmm.
It seems perfectly reasonable to me.
Oh, yeah. Root out the bad actors. And there's also a good way to segue to get people into, like, even thinking about different things about liberty. That person that just has probably never ever thought about any, that's been hardcore Dem or hardcore Republican, you know, this is a good way to show them, like, hey, maybe the state has too much power in this aspect.
Yep. And I think that's an investigation would be a great way to start that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So Carter Page was the first name when on March 21st, 2016, you remember when and we talked about this, when I was really just flailing against Trump in March, April of 2016, I was like, I just don't think this guy, he basically turned out to be, I was right. And I just remember like this story popping up, like everybody collectively went, who's advising this guy in foreign policy? Because we know he knows nothing. And that story started to build, and he listed off a few names, and the first name that he listed off on March 21st was Carter Page. He listed George Papadopoulos. I remember Greg reading the names and going, yeah, he's got a great team, this Carter Page. Like, I didn't pull the audio, but I bet if you go back and listen, he mentions it's Carter Page. Carter Page, PhD.
Explains why he was watched in 2013. If you're studying a lot of foreign policy and stuff like that, you've got it. Your IP address is hitting a lot of bad sites.
So Bloomberg did a profile on Page. Page had a whole lot of experience doing business in Russia. And this is from the Vox article, Carter Page, the star of the Nunes memo, explained. The Vox continues. He had far more positive views of Putin's regime than most Americans, and he wasn't a fan of the U.S. sanction on Russia. After growing up in New York and spending a few years in the Navy in the 90s, Page completed a few graduate degrees in international relations and business. Then for most of the 2000s, he worked at the investment banking firm Merrill Lynch, focusing on Russia and Eastern Europe. His work led him to move to Moscow from 04 to 07, and it entailed advising Gazprom, the majority Russian state-owned oil firm, on deals. Gee, where have we heard Gazprom?
Gazprom.
Rosatom.
I'm just going to just get here on
Hillary
the
Clinton.
Hillary
okay.
Clinton WikiLeaks real quick. I just, you know, no reason.
Soon afterward, he moved back to the U.S., left Merrill, and went into business for himself, advising investors on Russia-related projects. Through all this, Page didn't have a particularly high public profile until out of nowhere, Trump dropped his name. Miter quoted Miter quoted a former Merrill executive who worked with Page in Russia, professing shock at his high-profile new gig. I could not imagine Carter as an advisor on foreign policy, the former executive Sergei Alyshenko said. It's really surprising. I think anybody associated with Donald Trump at any point has been surprising. So why was this rando on Trump's foreign policy team, they ask. If we think hard enough, we can remember a time before Trump was president and the undisputed commander of the GOP. Back then, he was a disreputable outsider whose campaign faced fierce opposition from the party.
Mm-hmm.
And his aides decided that as the part of the task entailed putting together something they called a former policy team, that fell to Sam Clovis, who was a conservative talk radio show host and an evangelical activist from Iowa. So Clovis reached out to Ed Cox, the New York chair, in late 2015, asked to be put in touch. And they claimed the main reason they took Page was that they were talking to anyone with a pulse, as a campaign official put it in the Washington Post last year. Indeed, his task was surely complicated by the few in respectable GOP foreign policy circles were willing to talk to Trump at that point. And it's true. Remember back in early 2016, he didn't have the nomination. Everybody was hoping he wouldn't get the nomination. He was even more hated than he is now. Now Republicans are going, he's not so bad. That tax cut, I got an extra $60 in my paycheck. So I like it. So what did he actually do? To hear some in Trump's orbit say, nothing. So Mr. Page is not an advisor and has made no contribution to the campaign. Jason Miller said in 2016. He's never been a campaign, part of the campaign, period. Alrighty. However, emails and documents made public in connection with his testimony say he was in regular contact with several campaign foreign policy advisors in the summer of 2016. J.D. Gordon and Waleed Faries. Waleed Faries is probably a name you've heard. He's constantly on conservative talk show host, radio show host programs, talking about Islam and Israel and Russia and Syria. So it's kind of like the Papadopoulos thing. Like, he basically, they found somebody who had a PhD next to his name and had some credentials. They put him on the team. They had some cursory conversations with him, but they were so disorganized that he had no significant contribution. It seems like four people at any given time had any contribution to that stupid campaign. I don't know how Donald Trump won. Like, the more the more that you, like, oh, he broke every rule any of this. So yeah, I don't know.
Well, like, because some of the other campaigns, one, didn't have the early money because,
right.
To be honest, like, when Bush first got in, you know, Bush sucked up a lot of fundraising cash. And when he dropped out, he took a lot of cash with him.
Right.
You know, and I'm not going to sit here and, like, rehash that. 2016.
Right. So in July 19, 2016, Steele filed a report for what became known as his dossier, and it focused on Carter Page's Russia trip. That Page had met with Igor Sechin, the CEO of Rosensoft, the majority Russian government-owned oil company, and discussed lifting U.S. sanctions. That Page also met with Igor Dyvykin, Russian intelligence official, and discussed Russian compromat on Clinton and Trump. Steele also said in his dossier that when Page allegedly met with Sechin, the oil executive had offered Page and Trump's associates the brokerage of up to 19% privatized stake in Rosensoft in return for lifting sanctions, and that Page expressed interest and confirmed that Trump would lift sanctions if he won. So nobody has confirmed any of that stuff in the Steele dossier. But that was what was in that 2016 trip to Russia section. And that allegedly is what was put into the FISA memo to get him spied on. We don't know for sure because we don't have the magical powers to read classified information, Harry.
No. But sometimes they're sprinkled by the WikiLeaks fairy and then give us things.
Yeah. So why did they look into him way back in 2013? The Bureau was looking into a suspected Russian spy ring and learned that one of their suspects, Viktor Pobonobody,
sounds like a real name,
Podobnyy, so I just said Podonobody. If you're looking for a Russian spy, Viktor Podonobody, greatest fake name in all of Russian history, had met with Page in hopes of finding a potential recruit. In fact, Podonobody was caught on wiretap discussing Page. He writes to me in Russian to practice the language. He flies to Moscow more often than I do. He got hooked on Gazprom, thinking that if they have a project, he could rise up. Maybe he can, I don't know, but it's obvious that earn lots of money. I will feed him empty promises. You will promise a favor for favor. You get the documents from him and will tell him to go fuck himself. Nobody said one more thing about Page. I think he is an idiot. So that is why they started spying on on Carter Page. So there was another thing that Christopher Steele basically wrote, that he basically hates Donald Trump. So enough of this. Had enough of that. You know what? I'm going to... We're getting close on time. I don't want to do another five-hour episode, and I want to give gerrymandering and the Supreme Court case its due, so we'll probably do that Thursday. The court case that is before the Supreme Court is really interesting and really could have a great benefit to American politics, so I think I'm just going to keep that for Thursday, so... Okay. I know that I promised that in the beginning of the show, but you will get it. It will just be on Thursday or Friday, whichever you get. So in the meantime, Lady Doritos.
Oh, no.
Do you want to do Lady Doritos or do you want to do Facebook arguments?
Let's do Lady Doritos because Facebook arguments seem more of a low-key wall thing. Other okay. You know, Lady Doritos is too low-brow now for the Facebook.
for your little show. All right, so Facebook arguments it is. So I saw this article on Inc.com, and it's you should never, ever argue with anyone on Facebook according to science. So now, you will now see why this would have been the best second story of the night, but mm-hmm. I did not do that. And listen, we're all part of that. We just, like, we love it. We love arguing politics with people. It's in our DNA as libertarians.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's what we like doing.
Right. So,
especially with other libertarians.
They write, there's a simple reason this happens. It turns out we respond very differently to what people write than to what they say, even if those things are exactly the same. That's the result of a fascinating new experiment by UC Berkeley and University of Chicago researchers. In the study, 300 subjects read, watched video of, or listened to arguments about such hot-button topics as war, abortion, and country or rap music. Afterwards, they were interviewed about their reactions to the opinions. The general response was probably very familiar to anyone who's ever discussed politics, a broad belief that people who don't agree with you are either too stupid or uncaring to know better. But there was a distinct difference between those who had watched or listened to someone speak the words out loud and those who had read the identical words as text. Those who had listened or watched someone say the words were less likely to dismiss the speaker as uninformed or heartless than they were just reading the commoner's words. So I think that's really fascinating. So the research suggests the best way for people to disagree with one another or to work out their differences and arrive at a better understanding or compromise is by talking to one another, as people used to do at town hall meetings or over the dinner table. But now we've taken all this stuff to social media, text messages, and spoken word is increasingly uncommon. Then they talk about the Russians. Give me a fucking break. So to begin with, you should make a persuasive case for your political opinion or proposed actions. You're better off by doing a short video. So I think that's a really interesting idea. So if you are trying to make a political point, don't do it in written word because people can assign their own cadences and biases to the way that it would sound in their head. Mm-hmm. But if you make a video, let's say you want to do a Facebook status.
Yeah.
Turn your phone on, turn on the video camera, turn it around, do a quick selfie video, mm-hmm. and do it that way instead of writing it out.
Maybe that's why Snapchat is, like, you know, where most people like to communicate on.
I don't know. I don't do any politics on Snapchat.
It'd be kind
of
weird.
And I'm like one of the most political people you probably, any of you know. Like, I just don't, I don't know, because it's less, like, it's just more personal, and you don't want to get your peanut butter and your chocolate and your chocolate and your peanut butter.
Okay, Snapchat's not personal for me. I get people on there for like, I feel like leaving the wall group because you guys like take up a lot of time on my Snapchat. It teats up, but I usually get people. I don't get arguments about politics.
I'm sorry we annoyed you with our friendship.
I know. I usually get arguments with people about like rotary engines, car. Yeah, usually car guys. We usually just argue right. back and forth about stupid car things. Like, dang, this car. Like, I was complaining about my Subaru the other day, and all the Subaru people in the group just started like, you're an idiot. Da, da, da. So, screw you guys. I was very worried about my bun. Yeah, my Subaru got
Are you speaking English?
My Subaru's got a bun sticker on the front of it, like a bun coffee maker sticker on it. So I call it bun. It's a big rabbit.
As Stone says, another thing is wasting time arguing with a loser on Facebook. You lose self-esteem.
Yeah.
He's right.
Yeah. Because when someone can post a Facebook status, they can mean no like harm by it, but you can sit there and go like, screw this jerk. He's talking about me.
Yeah.
He was not even talking about you. You're not in the same, but you took it. You saw those boots. They the same size, fit your mindset at that time. You took them and marched right in there and started arguing.
You know, and it's a weird thing, and I'm just thinking about this.
Like, Pete Pill did a whole skit about that, too, when I think about it.
People are so nice. Like, people are nice. Like, if you have personal interactions with people, listen, it's 66 degrees in here. You'll live. We're almost done. Harry is the most demanding co-host. Like, he's the biggest, like, you think, oh, it's low-key wall. He must be low-key. No, he has his own chair. He complains about the heat every week. There's another suggestion. You should do this. You should do this. No, Harry. This is perfection. We've got perfection going on in the studio right now. Perfect temperature, perfect cats, perfect co-hosts. Just live with it, buddy. So people, like, you go out in the world and you interact with people and they're like, hey, what's up? How are you? Nice to see you, man.
Mm-hmm.
Good. You go in. Thanks. I want to buy a Butterfinger. All right. How are you? You go to a store. Can I help you with anything? No. How are you today? I'm great. How are you? Like, that seems to be I'm in the Midwest. I'm in Indianapolis. So, like, everybody here is really nice.
Mm-hmm.
But when I read stuff online, I read it defensively. Like, I read it like, oh, how am I today? How am I today? Like, and I know that's part of my personality, but maybe it's not just me. Like, I'm the least defensive person when I'm in a group of people. Like, we're just joking and getting along and everything's chill. Like, mm-hmm. I'm never on the defensive at work. I'm never on the defensive when I'm with my friends, but we get online. It's like, oh, that's what you think? Like, I turn into like a jealous girlfriend.
Yep. Yep. Well, I'm sitting there reading Boss Hogg's, you know, Facebook statics. Talking about Belichick, not Liberty.
Right.
Sports. How dare you?
Yeah, there's just something about it where you read, like, you just read everything defensively. And, like, if you make a status and then people start talking on that status, you're like, oh, really? And they're like, dude, chill out.
Mm-hmm.
That's a joke.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So everybody's sarcastic online.
Yeah. And that's another one cool thing about the Walt chat group is that it's like, even if you try to read that something, you're like, hey, man, I'm sorry. They're like, whoa. I know you kind of meant this way. It's kind of nice.
Yeah.
Way. But, like, yeah, that weird thing about Indiana, like, people joke about Indiana not being, like, that defensive on the phone, or, like, I've had a 30-minute conversation with a wrong phone number before.
Right.
You know?
So you're like, how are you today?
It makes me want to, like, that's when I keep my landline plugged in just because of those wrong phone numbers.
We're like Southern Canadians.
Yeah. Nobody has my landline phone number. I've never given it out. No one has it, but it rings all the time from wrong phone numbers. I pick it up and just talk to people. It's fun. It's awesome.
Oh, Harry.
Get a landline and talk to people. It's fun. It's always old boomers.
Well, who else uses the phone? So the host of NYC's podcast Note to Self, Manoush Zamordi, she wrote this book called Bored and Brilliant, How Spacing Out Can Unlock Your Most Productive and Creative Self. And I'm about a quarter of the way through this. I'm really enjoying it and really inspired to, like, get off my phone and less screen time. And so if you're looking for a book that you want to kind of learn about how the phone changes your brain and how you interact with the world, Bored and Brilliant. Really good book so far.
Yeah. And, like, I remember seeing your poll about that, and I said, yes, it does affect you. Like, not only the smartphone, but just saying electronics. Like, I love taking, like, electronic-free sabbaticals, doing something analog.
Yeah.
The podcast Tech Thing talks about, like, do something analog once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
Sovereign Tech even talks about do an analog vacation. I love doing that. I don't do that much in the wintertime because it's cold. It's hard to go outside. But during the summertime, I'll spend hours of half my Sunday out at Fort Bend and just walk around the trails and just do nothing but just stay away off. I don't have off my phone. I don't have an internet connection and just be in the world.
Yeah.
And it's like, I used to think people were kind of stupid sitting out by, like, a pool, just sitting there reading. But after sitting down, just doing nothing, just reading like a regular paperback book, I was like, this is the best thing in the world.
Yeah, so let me pull that poll up. And I do that in the summertime when the pool's open at the apartment complex. I'll go up there and I'll just enjoy reading a book. And, you know, I'll leave my phone at home. Maybe I'll take the Kindle, but, like, the Paperwhite is not, like, I don't consider the Kindle Paperwhite a device. But they basically say in this book that, yes, that is a device, and that your comprehension on actual paper versus a Kindle Paperwhite is much better on an actual book.
Yes.
Which I was fascinated by.
It is. All my computer certification books are actual books.
All right,
I got them all digital, but, like, I've every test I've ever passed, first try, I've gotten a real book in my hand.
So 5:30 yesterday, February 5th, I created a poll on the We Are Libertarians Facebook page, 615 votes so far. And I asked, since getting a smartphone, has your ability to read significantly diminished? Please clarify in the comments. Speed, and so what I mean by read, so answer this in your car, and you can go vote in the poll if you want or comment, but answer this in your car. Since you got a smartphone, has your ability to read changed? And by that, I mean the speed with which you read, the comprehension, the volume of things that you read, higher levels of distraction, and is your free time spent reading? Like, I have noticed, and we talked about this a couple years ago on the show for the first time, when I really started to notice, like, I have trouble reading a book now. Like, I was a kid who would read a book a book a day in the summertime sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always been a fast reader, but now I have made a point to read more. I'm reading more now in this year than I have ever before, because since starting to do, you know, two shows a week, I've got to be even more prepared and I've got to read more books.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still a struggle, because within 2 minutes, your brain starts going, wonder if I got a notification. I want some of that serotonin. I want a dopamine hit. Like, you want that validation of that notification, and there's anxiety around not being aware of what's happening on your phone, because these little devices are just dopamine. It's like the rat that pushes the button for the food.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the book talks about, the Bored and Brilliant book. Just your brain is like you're a rat in a cage hitting a button. And I've really noticed that the speed of my reading, the comprehension level, reading the same page 5 times and still not understanding what I'm reading, the amount of things that I can read, the reading grade level, like I could read academic texts and get it. Now I struggle to do that. Like, and I just don't think I'm alone. 25% say that yes, they've experienced what I've experienced, and 75% say no out of 615 votes, which surprised me that it's, you know, 25-75. I figured it'd be more 50-50 or 75 yes and 25% no. So maybe it is just me, but I don't know.
How many of those people are honest about themselves or actually noticed?
But that's a very good point. I'm sure there's a lot of people listening right now going, hey, I noticed the same thing. And I think there's going to be more of that trend where everybody goes, I got to do something about this. This thing is killing me. Mm-hmm. And a story in the book, this guy had like severe ADD after getting a smartphone. Well, it turns out he'd always been ADD. It just, the phone exacerbated all of the symptoms. And maybe that's what's happening to me.
Yeah. Like, the one thing, like, I will give you this, because like some people who like struggle with dyslexia, I know there's a lot of the dyslexic fonts,
right,
on your, like, well, those help people like read and comprehend books,
yeah,
better and faster. I could see that, but yeah, the whole aspect, yeah, that don't mean, because you'll start reading, go through a page and go like, wait a minute, you know, did I
right.
get a Facebook notification? Or you'll get one and you hear it, gonna go bing, and right. you hear it and you go like, what the heck is going on? Da 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 da. Or you know, just the treadmill of it all, of like of life, because you want to sit down and read your book, but you know that I just sent this proposal in and someone's going to send me an email back, and I
right.
need to be able to respond to that email. But I don't have anything else to do, so I won't want to read a book.
I've turned all notifications off on my phone. I have no notifications for anything except text messages, phone calls, and the New York Times, so I can get a breaking news alert because of this. Like, if I didn't work for We Are Libertarians, like, mm-hmm. I wouldn't have that on. I don't have it on for Facebook Messenger. I do have it on for Snapchat, because otherwise I'd never check it. But
yeah.
And I found that turning off all my notifications helps. The setting it in another room
mm-hmm.
for a long period of time really helps. And you just kind of, when it's out of sight, you eventually lose focus on it. Like, if you put it in the bathroom or in the bedroom while you're in the living room and you're trying to read, like, you don't, if it's by your side, you still kind of, your hand gravitates towards
it.
But your laziness will not allow you to, like, you put it in the bathroom next to the toilet.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to go pee every 2 to 4 hours, you know, if twice a day, 3 times a day if you're regular. You know, you'll go in there and you'll have an extended period of time where you can check all your platforms.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I've been doing when I'm home.
Yeah. So yeah, this is the Open Dyslexia font.
Yeah, I have it on the Kindle, and it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not like, I've never been diagnosed with dyslexia, but I've always, ever since I found out about the dyslexia font, I love it. It helps me read so much better.
Yeah. But. All right. So I couldn't stop laughing about Leggy Doritos yesterday. Like, okay. We're in a time where the world is going, you know what? The way that I treat women does need some work. Where men, even the most chauvinistic of men, are going, I've never thought about that before. And then Doritos says, hold my beer. And the head, the chief executive of PepsiCo, Indra Nooyi, told the Freakonomics podcast on January 31st that Doritos, which is owned by PepsiCo, is developing a chip for women. As you watch a lot of the young guys eat the chips, they love their Doritos, and they lick their fingers with great glee. And when they reach the bottom of the bag, they pour out the little broken pieces into their mouth because they don't want to lose the taste of that flavor. Women would love to do the same, but they don't. They don't like to crunch too loudly in public, she said. She said, the company's future chip for women will be low crunch, the full taste profile, but not have so much of the flavor stick on the fingers. And how can you put it in a purse? Because women love to carry a snack in their purse. I don't think I've ever heard anything more tone-deaf than this. Like, I mean, she's kind of right. One of the reasons I hate Doritos is that it sticks on your fingers.
Not the MSG?
Well, that, and it makes me feel like garbage after having
it. The carbs?
Like, we did this thing where the Pringles, you basically take all the Pringles flavors.
Yeah.
And you can make different concoctions based on it. Mm-hmm. I personally like pickle and the chili lime and the honey mustard. And you put three of those together and you eat it. It's great. I've been doing that for 2 days. I've had 400 Pringles. And I get sick every time I eat potato chips.
That's rookie level stuff. Okay.
Right.
I can see that you don't around people who smoke a lot of wheat. What you need to get is some Frito corn chips.
I don't. Oh. I work at a radio station. I'm around nothing but people who smoke wheat.
I doubt that.
They drug test us to make sure we're positive. Muffins just poked her head right into the video. It looks like Science Theater 3000. Like, it's just nothing but, if you're honestly, go to the YouTube video to like an hour 45 and look at the muffins.
That's hilarious.
She's looking at the god,
it's a kaiju attack. No,
so funny. I'm not a fan of I like Doritos, but they make me sick.
Yeah, I will eat them. It is a guilty pleasure food. I'm a Cooler Ranch type of guy. I like the Cooler Ranch versus the nacho cheese. But I understand. Like, yeah, I love Pringles. I love the crunch. I love the man, the crunch of it. You know, and that's why I get the Cooler Ranch, because it's blue. It's for men.
Right.
And it sticks on your fingers.
Yeah.
But I prefer,
I much like the blue over the nacho.
Yeah, the nacho. Yeah, the blue manly ones. And but I'm telling you, what you need to do is get some Frito corn chips, right? And then you want to get some rainbow sherbet ice cream.
Hate Fritos.
Oh, get some rainbow sherbet ice cream and dip that, or the chili cheese Fritos, and then put the and do a walking taco with it.
Nope. Listen, anything corn based in chip form, I don't like corn products.
How are you allowed in Indiana? Let me call. Yeah, I've got a
corn tortillas are garbage.
Let me call Hokum, get you deported.
Corn tortillas taste like sawdust held together with taint butter.
Okay, yeah, I'll give you that.
Flour tortillas all the way.
But
Fritos are gross.
Fritos are not gross, okay? How are you allowed in Indiana?
I don't like soy either. We only have soybeans.
And corn.
And corn. Let me say, hey, if you live in Indiana, you need to contact Gene Lysing's office. She's the only thing standing between Indiana and industrial hemp. And she needs to hear from you that we want industrialized hemp. We can get 3 cash crops in Indiana and grow something that I'll eat. Because maybe I'll start eating hemp instead of corn or soy.
He's starting nothing but hemp.
Nothing but hemp. Listen, if you listen to the potheads, hemp cures everything.
Everything.
Like, if you have
pimple.
My pimple will go away if I just take CBD.
Magic drug. But yeah, the Lady Doritos thing. So, like, But the thing is, like, there's a lot of gendered things that shouldn't be gendered, and there's some things that are just gendered because of the one gender just or sex just wants something else with their product.
Right.
Especially, like the whole argument, like, what's the biggest difference between a man's razor and a women's razor? The gigantic, like, lotioning strips on it. And the simple fact that, you know, you'd get more beards if a men didn't, you know, if razors weren't as cheap. Or when it comes down to it, men can shave with a safety razor that's a single blade and get it for 99 cents.
Right.
You know, there's not many women that's going to sit there and, like, shave their legs or areas with a safety razor. And, you know, and I've been trying to move off using shaving cream and just using oil, but that freaking hurts.
Yeah, I haven't shaved. I trim, but I got the beard now.
I shaved 2 weeks ago.
And honestly, ladies, none of you guys can look, but ladies, go to my Instagram, at cspangle, C-S-P-A-N-G-L-E. You can see me with my new haircut. It is the best haircut I've ever had in my life. I look good.
It's photoshopped. It's totally shopped.
It's not shopped.
So shopped.
All right. What in the world? Muffins. See, Muffins is the shy cat, and so when people are here, she hides in the other room. But she's all over the table today. She's in love with Harry. Do you have a jungle fever? She's talking to Harry.
Anyways, but yeah, Lady Doritos. All right, so like, yeah, I've seen this everywhere.
Back to the important
things. It was
things.
Huge, like, and it was funny to watch people comment about it, talk about it, how sexist it was, then, you know, and then, like, you could watch some, like, the commentary people, because some people really wanted to see what they were going to make, because this is funny, you know, or wanted to try it anyways.
Right.
Because usually when the chip company goes out and tries to make a different chip or anything, they can make some, like, the Lay's, you know, choose your own flavor, pick your own flavors and stuff like that thing. So people are just wondering what the heck this is going to be, and also, like, a crunchless chip, this is going to be disgusting, or, you know, because that's half the, you know, impact. But then there's part of me that was like, hey, could they make a healthy chip? Like, this thing's going to be made of corn, it's going to be out of cauliflower or something?
Right.
You know, and if they make it something like that can fit a woman's purse, that means it's going to fit in the back of my backpack then, you know, and if it doesn't give, like, the flavor stuff on my keyboard and low crunch, dude, I can play this fucking game and I get crap all over my keyboard. That's another reason why I use cheap Dell keyboards, because, like, a keyboard gets disgusting. I like to throw it away.
Dell keyboards are the best.
Right. You can beat on them and they're super cheap. Yeah. And you can and the Dell monitors, have you ever used it? Like a Dell?
No.
The Dell business monitors? You can sit there, they easily got this thing, so you can just kick it up so you can go portrait to landscape mode very easily. But, you know, so, like, the idea of a potato chip that's low crunch, so you're not getting crunch on the mic or getting, like, the floaty crap all over your keyboard and your mouse, this sounded like a good idea, you know, if they would just drop the gendered term on it.
So here's what actually they meant.
What? That wasn't real?
Yeah, crap. Like, everything else in society, social media ruined the truth.
I want my Dundee movie. You can go. I'm sorry.
All right. Sorry. So here's what PepsiCo said today. This is on AdAge.com. The reporting on the specific Doritos product for female consumers is inaccurate. We already have Doritos for women. They're called Doritos, and they're enjoyed by millions of people every day. At the same time, we know needs and preferences continue to evolve, and we're always looking for new ways to engage and delight our consumers. What's wrong with Lady Doritos? Let me be a male chauvinistic pig here.
Uh-oh. The misogyny's coming out.
No. Distinction is not inequality. And there is a distinct difference between men and women in a lot of ways. And if you're talking about consumer behaviors, they're like, if you read Paco, it's called Why We Buy by Paco, you have a Paco Eldridge. It's a great book, and this book is just all about the different ways that different people, different cultures, different genders, like, how we buy stuff. And if a company, a capitalistic company, wants to come out with a product geared towards women or geared toward men, like, what's the problem with that? Like, there are certain, like, yoga products.
Yeah.
Yoga products are clearly geared towards a female consumer. Sorry, Harry. I didn't mean to trigger you there. But
stop wearing my yoga pants. To, you know,
when you go buy Gaiam at the Target,
It's
you know, floral. It's soft colors. It's not, you know,
peaceful for yoga,
right? But it's geared towards women. They designed the package specifically for women. Why do we have a problem with that?
I don't.
They've picked a target market.
Yeah. Because, like, when I had to get my yoga block, I bought myself some yoga blocks and the strap, you know, the black ones.
Right.
You're like, super expensive, but the little pink ones, yeah, like $16. I'll get these.
Right.
I don't care.
Yeah. Like, it's marketing.
Right.
And so if you know, for every media outlet I'm involved with, it's all geared towards men.
Mm-hmm.
Are women encouraged to listen? Of course.
Mm-hmm.
We love women that listen to the show.
Mm-hmm.
But you're 30% of our audience.
Right.
70% of... Now, the way that I do business is that I don't try to gear towards a specific anything. I just say exactly what I think,
mm-hmm.
and men listen, and I don't know why, because I think men are more... There are more libertarian men that are listening to podcasts than women. Does that mean that we don't have great fans like Christy Avery and Lisa Crosby and Carly Ernst? Of course not.
Yeah.
We love them.
Mm-hmm.
Every girl that I've ever dated in the last 4 years has been a listener to this show. So there's nothing wrong with gearing your product towards, like, we're gender neutral.
Right.
You know, like, but if you look at our artwork, you could say we're not gender neutral. It's not necessarily geared towards, you know, if I were a female brand, I wouldn't pick, like, the fake socialist artwork. Like, I don't mm-hmm. know if people notice this, but like the actual podcast art
mm-hmm.
is a play on the Dear Leader stuff. It is the hard iconography of socialist communist regimes
mm-hmm.
applied to a libertarian podcast, because I may be the only one that gets that that's what it is, but it makes me laugh.
Makes me laugh. I think it's freaking hilarious.
Right. But, like, I want to change it to be a little softer, a little more open to everyone.
Are you going to keep up the moniker of Princess Celestia, like I try to give you in the Discord?
No, I'm not into that pony shit.
Crap. Well, like, as we go after the lady listeners more for 2018, the We Are Libertarians Ladies edition that's going to come out this fall of 2018.
Double L. Ladies, I have a beard now. So yes. No, I just, like, I get, like, why it's tone deaf. It's stupid. It's like, but if they've done research and they have tested a lot of female customers, and mm-hmm. a lot of female customers say, I like your product, but I would buy more of your product if it weren't as gross on my hands mm-hmm. and you didn't look like an animal when you eat it. Because let's face it, like, those triangles for the Doritos are really big. And, like, if you're like, when you're trying to stuff them in your mouth and you're, like, trying to open your mouth wide, like, I look crazy when I eat Doritos.
Hmm. That's nice.
You know,
I like Doritos because they're triangle shaped and they look like mini rotaries. But,
like, guys are more willing to be gross. We're just grosser, and so women, So I look at it and I go, "What is really at the end of the day wrong with this? Like, smaller chips, less crunch, less dust. We sell 10% more Doritos. Great."
Yeah. I understand what they're saying. I really wish they did take that and made it more, like, less, like, to gender. Like, because, like I said, like, you know, online gamers would love this thing, especially, like, even, like, the console peasants with their controllers are outrageously expensive for some reason, you know. I think they would love to have, like, a nice, you know, set, because we've got your headset on there, so the mic's right here, and you're crunch, 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 crunch.
Right.
It's freaking annoying. So I think, like, I like, that's why I said I love the idea of it. When I'd go to the store and pick up a bag of that said ladies Doritos, yes, I don't care.
Yeah, me neither.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I'd probably like the Lady Doritos better.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's why you shouldn't call them Lady Doritos.
Right.
That was just something the internet gave them, which is funny.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Yeah, that's the other thing about it, that it was the internet took a thing and sprawled
us out. And again, because it starts with all the Carrie Bradshaws and Hunter S. Thompsons that make $20,000 while living in New York City, working part-time for clickbait mills that churn out our culture now. And so they all jumped on it instead of sitting there going, you know what, capitalism isn't a bad thing. Maybe this is a response to the market. Well, they wouldn't say that because they hate capitalism.
Correct, yeah.
So, all right, let's start wrapping up. Harry, final thoughts for this episode?
Final thoughts. Just like this and all stories that go through, make sure you do if you worry about something or the title is too clickbaity or too one-sided or you feel good, it's a good idea to sit on a story for less than 12, a little bit more than 12 hours and just let a story mule around before you sit there and go and share it. I think a lot of the tenets of We Are Libertarians talks about, like, be careful what you do share and look around. For it. And it's the other thing with it, if you do, Reinhold and I talked about this after Low Key Wall last Wednesday. Like, the good thing is, if you do have someone that does accidentally share something that's clickbaity, or that somebody does show like a negative advertisement or something, talk like that, give that person also, when you do go to talk to that person about it, give them space to also walk that back. Embarrassing or attacking somebody because they probably A, didn't know, too much in a hurry, you know, because they just hit it real quick, or, you know, and the thing is, some people share stuff on their Facebook wall not for you. They share it for themselves so they can find it, so they can easily find something later.
Right.
Not necessarily like, this is what I totally believe. That's not why, and another reason why they share that, you know. So be careful how you go after people. Give people the ability to walk something back and have that open discussion with them. I wish I would have recorded this whole 2-hour conversation I had with Rhino after Low Key Wall, which talking about the Wall We Are Libertarians Discord channel, like, we thought about just doing like an after show for Low Key Wall, just hanging out, but afterward, but I'm still trying to work that out with my wife. You know, she barely likes me. Like, you know, she kind of likes it doing me, but, you know, 2 days in a row last week got her a little upset. But
at least this way she gets you out of the house.
Yeah, on Tuesday I leave, you know, right. Instead of like, nope, this is where I'm at, here, right here. And since it's like I take care of Gunther all day and study while I'm in the exact same spot I'm at, so all the good stuff, the easy stuff to take care of Gunther are right where my desks are.
Right.
All the toys, everything's right there, so everything's an easy reach. So I can understand her, like, you know, her issues with it. So, like, a lot of people even got to see Gunther a little bit in the background, you know, the swing in that last episode, you know, because Grandma bought her a new swing.
Nice.
Because she heard the other one broke. And I was getting ready to take it apart and fix it, and Grandma's just said, I bought you another one. So, yeah, I didn't have to go fix it. Give people to walk it back. Please come over to the Wall Discord. We're also tomorrow on Twitch, we're going to do Low Key Wall. I'm glad we didn't have to cover that lowbrow episode. That's way too low for the basement of Wall.
Which, what was it?
The Lady Dorito thing. I'm glad we didn't have to cover that on Low Key Wall. I think tomorrow I may, like, try to come look, because I missed an anniversary last January. I'm so busy about this, but I like to talk about it to people, and I totally missed it. It's the anniversary of Aaron Swartz. I like to, if you don't know who Aaron Swartz is, turn it into Low Key Wall tomorrow, and I will talk your head full about Aaron Swartz. And if you don't know who Aaron Swartz is, you use a technology that he created to listen to this podcast. You know, you use a lot of different things that he helped build and stuff like that. And his death and his entire story, his life is very important.
Yep. And you should cover the partner of his that just committed suicide as well.
Yes.
Quote unquote suicide.
Yeah, he's suicided.
Yeah. All right. So for my part, for my final thought, want to thank you guys for listening. Thank you, Brandon, Luke, Christy, Avery, Jason, Doolittle, and Craig DaCosta for being $100 a month Patreon subscribers. You are awesome, and you guys help make this go around. Everybody that donates on Patreon helps so much. Like, you have no idea how much that those Patreon donations help this program. I have been able to do so many cool things. I've got a couple cool things that I'm working on right now that I'm only able to do because I have the money to do it. So thank you so much for doing that. In addition to that, one of those things is that I'm going to go to LibertyCon and I'm going to go to the National Libertarian Convention. Those two are pretty much locked up and almost ready to go. LibertyCon is the SFL event in Washington, D.C., used to be International Students for Liberty Conference. So now it's called LibertyCon. It's the first weekend in March in Washington, D.C. They asked us to come out and be part of Radio Row, so we're going to go. And it should be great exposure for the podcast. If you are a listener, please check me out on Radio Row. Look me up. I'll try and set up maybe an event so we can all get together and meet all as if you're a listener to the program, hit me up too, beforehand. Send me an email at editor@weirdlibertarians.com, a Facebook message to the Facebook page, a tweet, whatever. and let me know you're going to be there or at the Libertarian Convention, and then we can put together some sort of event where we all can get together and chat. So looking forward to seeing everybody and taking my very first trip as media for We Are Libertarians.
Yep.
So very exciting.
And
if you want to help offset the cost, because there is a lot of cost in the travel, the room, the materials, and all that good stuff, that is, you can help offset those costs. If those tax checks came in and you want to give some of that stolen money that you got back to help offset these travels, then please, I would be grateful. It would really help me out. That is wearelibertarians.com. Scroll to the bottom and the one-time PayPal donation button is there. If you can't, at least think about subscribing on Patreon. Because then $5 a month, $10 a month, $25 a month, $100 a month, you get something out of it, and you're going to continue to support this program. So we thank you so much for being a part of our work. If you don't subscribe, you're very dear to us. There are an average of over 7,000 people that listen in an episode. Within the first 12 hours of posting an episode, we have 2,000 downloads. Which,
crazy.
I know. I looked at. I kept refreshing. I was like, "This is a mistake." 2,000 downloads is what we were doing in early 2016. So we are. It's four times that bigger now. It's just amazing. We keep growing a ton, and you guys are a big part of that. If you listen, if you're downloading, we thank you so much for downloading. Please keep sharing with friends. Tell people about the podcast. We don't have an advertising budget. We put it all into some other stuff. I will occasionally advertise on Facebook, but I don't see a lot of growth out of advertising. What I find the growth, it comes from adding on services a lot of times. So things like having We Are Libertarians Radio have a presence on TuneIn, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
That cost about $100 a month, and we, you know, help grow that way. So adding services, that's really better than advertising for us, so that's why we do it. So the best way to advertise is A, be searchable wherever people search, and B, have people tell their friends. And I love hearing stories about, yeah, I was talking to this person, and then they said, hey, did you hear this thing on We Are Libertarians? Really love that. So really affirms what we're doing here. So keep spreading the word. It's an election year. It's going to be super important that you spread the word as people want to know what the heck is going on in just a reasonable way. And I think we provide that. So please, would appreciate your help. So Thursday, we will talk about gerrymandering. Aaron Schwartz tomorrow on Low Key Wall. And until Friday, we will see you then. Until then, we haven't seen each other since this happened, but I said the new catchphrase in front of Galt and Creighton.
Ooh.
And they go, what is that bullshit?
Oh, wow.
And they go, what happened to the old catchphrase? And I was like, I just didn't want to do it anymore.
Mm-hmm. Because
this is about as good as I can do. I can't get better. Like, no, you're going back to the... I'm just going to start. It's nice when you have friends and they just make fun of you to your face and go, mm-hmm. You sound ridiculous. So until next week, we'll see you then.
Thank you for listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Get our other shows at wearelibertarians.com.